and this is my chapter of As the Story Grows. Just say that and don't screw it up, jerk.
All right.
No, I'm kidding.
Hi, this is Shane Oshner from Everything in Slow Motion, and this is my chapter of As the Story Grows.
You're done.
Well executed.
Nailed it.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
I am being realistic.
As the story grows.
Welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav. This week I got to talk to Shane Oshner from the band Everything in Slow Motion on Face Down Records. Super cool that Shane and Quiggle reached out to me and said, hey, would you like to speak to this guy? He's got an EP called Laid Low coming out on April 22nd. I'd like to get an opportunity to get it out there. Sure, Shannon. I would love to. That sounds great. So I listened to some of the stuff, never heard Everything in Slow Motion before. Love it. Heard of his former band, Hands. Definitely knew about them. Never, just missed the boat on them. So I got to circle back and listen to all this stuff. Now, this is good stuff. This is another kind of a one-man band thing we got going on. You get to listen to his story and how that all happened. I'm willing to say that it's probably one of the more unique stories involving a walnut. That's all I'll say. It gets a little gnarly a little later. But anyway, check it out. Oh, and the song that you were hearing coming in here is Coma off of the new EP, Laid Low, which is going to be coming out April 22nd on Face Down Records. Wanted you to hear a little exclusive clip of that. And I have a link in the notes of this chapter to a promotional video for the song Bad Season. Want you to check that out too. Pretty neat. I appreciate any Patreon support. If anybody wants to check out any of that stuff, the links are below. Let's just get moving. Let's get right into it. I know y'all got a lot to do. Shane from Everything in Slow Motion.
I hope you find what you're looking for.
Somebody just ran by. Who was that?
That was my wife, Holly. She'll probably run by again.
Oh, hi, Holly.
Oh, she's crawling by now. She doesn't want to be seen.
Oh, she does not have to do that. It's not that important of a podcast.
Oh, I know. She feels underprepared, maybe.
I got it. I haven't shaved in like 8 days, Holly, so it's okay.
You don't have to crawl across the floor. 8 days. You don't have to crawl across the floor.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
So obviously married with a wife named Holly, because I saw her run by.
Yep, she ran by and then crawled by.
And then crawled by. I did not see that, so I'll take your word for it.
Yep.
And then you mentioned kids. You got children too?
Two children, two little girls, Arbor and Veda. One is Arbor's 5, Veda is 2.5.
Okay.
Yep. Spoiled, rotten brats. So
that's how you do it.
But extremely cute, so I love them.
Yeah, they get away with murder. Good for you. And yeah. From what I got, I have to thank Shannon Quiggle for making this happen.
She's the best.
She has been nothing but, she's been so nice to me. She's like, I have another band. Would you like to talk to them? I'm like, sure. Another face down band. Yeah, I guess I'll squeeze them in somewhere.
Yeah, why not? But,
yeah, this is rad. So thanks again, Shannon, and everybody at Face Down for making this happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, this has been a pretty cool experience with her so far. And,
they make a lot of good things happen. So
they do. I've
they're nice people.
A few of their records. Yeah, they seem to be. and her husband Dave did your artwork for the new EP.
That guy is the greatest. So you want to talk
your
about?
I like your artwork. It's very from what I've seen. It's very. It's not like a lot of heavier bands have all this like jagged.
Yeah.
It's like we never got out of that 90s imagery where everybody has like a rib cage and weird typewriter font upside down and all that silliness. And yours is very like hang it on the wall, picture-y.
You know what I mean? It's funny. Like, you know, first of all, speaking of Shannon and Dave, if you were to ever hang out with those two at the same time, it's like extreme power couple. Like, you're like looking at them and you're like, how do you guys do, like, what's happening here? Like, I need to go home and I need to be a cooler person. And I need to, I don't know, like, my wife and I need to do that, whatever you guys are doing. They just like radiate coolness out of them. And
let me get this straight. What you're saying is if I was doing a podcast with Dave Quiggle, Shannon Quiggle would not crawl by in the back. She'd be like, move over, I'm Shannon Quiggle, right?
I don't know. I could see her crawling by if she wasn't prepared for the day.
I'm totally kidding.
But you should do an interview with just both Dave and Shannon and talk to them about what it's like to be a married couple working for a record label, publicist, artist guy. Like, that'd be cool. I'd watch that. That'd be awesome.
I'll do it. Meet the Quiggles.
Yeah, it's perfect. So,
it's happening.
But anyways, Dave has been doing my album artwork now since 2011 or 2010. And every time, like, it's funny because, like, he will do something, whatever he sends me.
Oh shit.
Uh-oh, what happened?
I forgot to hit record for the live broadcast.
Uh-oh.
That's fine. We'll keep, I mean, everything is audio. We'll keep the audio, but I never recorded the video. Stupid ass.
Sometimes it'll happen.
Ugh. Such a dope. Anyway, if you're watching the video, you have to go listen to the podcast now to get the first 5 minutes because I'm a dipstick and forgot to hit record.
Way to go, dipstick.
That's how I do it. Now you got to do the audio and you got to go to YouTube and da-da-da-da. See how? Well, on the plan, son. Anyway, what were you saying? Sorry, go back to Dave.
Oh, okay. So Dave, yeah, like he'll send something to me, and what I love about it is like if I show anybody else is like, whoa, Dave Quiggle did that? That doesn't look like Dave Quiggle. And so he has this very, like, thing. He does this thing, the signature Dave Quiggle style, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And he can, like, out of nowhere, like, turn into, like, a chameleon and do something that's, like, completely off the radar, where it's like, Dave Quiggle did that. What? Like, and he knows that that's the stuff that I like. And it's funny because now we've gotten to the point where, like,
for that Phoenix album that I released, the Everything in Slow Motion Phoenix. If the record cover is really beautiful, it's very like a lot of colors going on, whatever. Well, he sent me the first cover that he sent me of that was like a hand in a match, and it was like burning out, and it was really simple. And I looked at it and I'm like, yeah, I don't know. And it's a weird thing to tell Dave Quiggle no. Like, it feels weird. It feels wrong.
It's weird to tell any artist, like, I'm not really wild about that. Because then they look at you like, well, you just offended me.
And luckily, Dave is just like, dude, like, you just got to tell. I don't care. He's like, I'll draw 150 things till we get it right. Just let me know if this is the vibe you like, you know? And he's like, you can do that with him. And he's not offended at all. But I still feel like, you know, it's Dave. And I love everything he does. So, like, when it comes to, like, that time where it's, like that one cover that I was just like, I was like, Dave, can we maybe do something different? And he's just like, just give me a day. A day later, he comes back with the actual cover for Phoenix with the rocket and all
rocket
that.
Rocket ship, yeah.
And course, I'm just like, I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I'm like, you know exactly what I like, because I like all the spacey stuff. Like, put a rocket in it or anything in outer space, and I'm like sold. It doesn't matter what it is.
Okay.
And I'm like, you knew like exactly just what would get me. Like, so you just did. You just put a rocket ship on there and a bunch of other crap. You knew that it was going to be a home run. And he's like, yeah, pretty much. So like,
what's wrong with that? What's wrong with going back to an artist that knows your style? I'm thinking tattoos.
Yeah,
You stick with the same guy, he kind of gets your vibe, and you know, it's gonna be improved upon as you approach the wrist or whatever. You know what I mean? If you go to a different guy every time, you got to start over every time.
Oh, I know, and it's funny. You know, it's like going out to dinner with a dude that really loves Coca-Cola. And it's like, you're trying to order him a new drink, like, hey, all right, let's try this. And he's open to it, you know, like, okay, I'm interested to experiment a little bit. Sure, let's get that weird, whatever you call it. Okay, takes a sip, and you look at him, and you're like, just get this guy a Coke. Just get him a Coke. That's me when it comes to artwork most of the time. So just put some rocket ships on it. It's all good.
Got it. Space.
But yeah, so it was cool when Dave did the cover for this EP because
the new EP is called
Laid Low. Have you seen the cover for that yet?
I have.
Okay, the like crushed flower thing.
It's like a hand squashing what looks like a tulip. Or
That's a T-shirt. That's one of the T-shirt designs. Okay. The actual cover is the. Just like it's like a rose crushed on a sidewalk, and it's very, very simple.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did see that. And yeah, I got the T-shirt mixed up. Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And, when he sent me that, I was like, okay, this is cool. Cause one, there's no like spacey stuff. And, I knew that he was going to like try to keep it out of the outer space stuff. And, cause I'm just a sucker for it. So anyways, he sends me the cover, and it was awesome because like, it's the cover that, like, you know, when I first saw Phoenix, I was like, wow, because there's all these, you know, like I said, there's all these colors, there's all this, like, crazy stuff happening. And with that one, I kind of looked at it, and I just, like, sat and looked at it, and I looked at it for, like, 20 minutes, and then put it away, and then looked at it for another 20 minutes, and then I'm just like, what if we tried this? Can you make it darker and whatever? And he, like, makes it darker, and then he makes it another way, and then I'm like, of course, I'm like, you know what, the original one's the best. Yeah, you're right. Like, and it's just funny because I he kind of just told me that. He's like it's not really meant to be like this like wow factor, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's more about like the detail.
It's called
and
laid low.
right. And he goes what I like about this and what I like about what you've done in the past is, he goes, all the music that you've created, and this like peeled back a layer of thought that like didn't surprise me, because like Dave and I have had enough conversations in life to just like, to where I know that like him and I think on this weird, crazy level that I feel like some people don't. And, at least a lot of my friends don't anyways. So, he starts like,
telling me, he's like, well, everything you've done in the past, all your music has always been just like this bigger than life kind of sound. Like, it's big and spacey. And he's like, and your lyrics are very like, you know, like universal and are kind of speaking like to everybody and all this stuff, you know? Yeah. And he goes, and this EP is, and he goes, and that fits like the big outer space theme and those covers and everything, the artwork that just looks, you know, like that. Yeah. And he's like, but this EP, he's like, this one feels different. He's like, this one feels like really like there's way more simplicity to it. And it feels way more personal and way more like under the microscope. And he's like, so that's why I did this cover this way, is because, you know, you go from the big outer spacey stuff to just a single like crushed flower on a freaking sidewalk. And he's like, it's the total, you know, opposite end of the spectrum.
Now, and part of that because Shannon sent me some bio stuff on it and everything. You wrote this entire thing on an acoustic guitar and then built it into what it is.
So yeah, which was really weird.
It kind of is more intimate. And that's the whole unplugged, sitting on a stool, explaining the song to the crowd thing. Like, you did kind of open up a new level of like, where am I trying to go with that? Instead of going for the landscape, big, arena, outer space sound, you're going for more of the, you know, simple crushed flower on a sidewalk dude with an acoustic vibe, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was more of like a writing experiment than anything, because, you know, every time I approach writing, I try to do it differently. I try to have a different vibe and a different, just a different approach to it. Cause I don't like to repeat the same crap. Like, I just, you know, like I shouldn't say crap, I guess, but, well, some might call it crap, but, anyways, it's like, you know,
you're not worried about naughty words on my podcast, right? You can say crap. That'd be
cool. Yeah. I'm not worried about naughty words. You know, like going from album to album, it's just like, I like to change the atmosphere and to change the vibe and give the listener a totally different experience. And for myself, selfishly, to try new things and to push myself to be uncomfortable and to figure it out. And so, you know, with this album, I've never just written acoustically before and then turned it into something. I always start with, you know, pre-production myself, and I'll do big drums, and then once I get a big drum track that I really like, I'll put guitar on it, and then I'll put some bass on it, and the songs will kind of build themselves. So they always end up like being big, and they always end up having kind of you know, this same kind of pattern to them. And so with this, I'm like, and especially like this time, I went with a new producer, my friend Jay Hall, and he's just like, dude, he's like, just try writing everything on an acoustic. And I'm like, I've never thought of that. So I started writing things on it and then bringing the songs in and trying to build them into actual big, you know, band songs. Right. And it's funny because, like, it was so uncomfortable for me. Like, it was so different. And it pushed me out of my box. And the end result was songs that still kind of sound like me, but are completely different, you know? So
yeah,
it did. It totally worked and created this different vibe. And that goes back to the screaming thing too. And all my stuff is like screaming stuff in the past. There's a little bit of singing stuff, but you know, it's like writing these songs like this with this method, none of the songs required screaming. It's like, I was listening to them as we were going and writing lyrics, and I'm like, there's screaming's like unnecessary right now, you know? So I just, you know, that was kind of the whole idea behind this, was like, let's get real uncomfortable. Let's just experiment and see what happens. And
that's neat that you said it the way you did too. A couple paragraphs ago, you said selfishly, I like to do that. That's an interesting dynamic because you are everything in slow motion, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So when you say selfishly, that can only be contrasting compared to if you were in a band dynamic and the other guitarist didn't want to do something, and then you know what I mean? And you used to be, this whole thing started, we're all over the place. This isn't going to be in a chronological.
No, it won't.
Cause no, I like that though. Cause I don't want people to listen to it. Like, you know, where did you buy your first guitar? Who cares?
Yeah.
the band that you kind of got known from was Hands.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a band.
Yeah, band.
You were in a band with members, and you did the whole get together, right? You know, we all know, everybody who's ever been in bands knows what that's like. And when you decided to do everything in slow motion, you decided to do everything on your own. Can you talk a little bit about the dynamic of the dichotomy between the two?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, like in Hands. Well,
it has to be, because you're the drummer, you're the bass player, you're the producer, you're the idea guy, you're the guy
right,
like taking care of stickers.
You know? The drummer from Hands, Josh Silbernagle, is one of my best friends ever, and we've been best friends for a really long time. And him and I started writing music together and jamming together and playing together when we were like 13. And that's what we would do every day after school and on our weekends. And we used to practice, like, this is no exaggeration, like him and I would practice literally on a weekend for 12 hours a day. For 12 hours. We'd go to a grocery store, we'd get like a just cases of Dr. Pepper and like a bunch of other crap, and would just like huddle in this little room in his parents' house and just play music. So wake me a small room, but he had this big Pearl drum set with way too many toms, and his cymbals were trash, and his whole, like, all the walls were covered in posters from like Tooth and Nail and Solid State Records bands and all this. But then there was blood everywhere on the walls, because all 12 hours we would play as hard and as loud as you could play, and his hands would just bust open on the drum rims, and blood is just all over the cymbals, and it looks like a murder scene in there, because it kind of was. You know what I mean?
His parents must have loved it. 12 hours of noise, blood on the paint.
You know, I don't know how they did it. And like, his mom used to like bring down like these trays of brownies and stuff. I mean, we spent so much time like through our like big developing years just playing music together. Get me right! So when it came time, you know, later on then to do Hands, which I was probably 20 years old maybe when Hands started, or I don't know, 19 or 20, but we had been playing together and writing together for a long time. So him and I through Hands were like definitely the primary writers. So him and I would jam a ton and do stuff. And then at the time, our guitar player Ian and our bass player Chris, those guys would come in and they would contribute parts, and we'd try and figure out how to put all the pieces together, you know. Just throughout the whole band, though, it was a lot of Josh and I really just kind of building that foundation, and then everyone would come in and kind of put their thing on it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that experience was really comfortable for me because I'd been playing with Josh forever, you know, where it felt like forever. Like I'd clocked in like thousands and thousands of hours just playing with Josh. So especially at a 12-hour-a-day rate. So anyways,
that's a month worth of band practices for most bands.
Yeah,
together for 3 hours once a week.
Yeah.
12 hours, you guys knocked it out in one day.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts, man. We lived in a very small town in North Dakota. There wasn't a lot going on. I feel like we were the only two that actually in the entire town pursued music on any level. And then everybody else was just like a wrestler or a football player and drove around in their cars and listened to Dr. Dre and yelled at us because we were musicians and we sucked. And
quit playing that music, don't you know?
Where's Pancake's house?
What?
We stop at Pancake's house.
What are you, nuts? We have pancakes for breakfast. Gotta go to a place where I can get a shot and a beer and steak, maybe.
Right. Well, exactly. Well, we were, you know, we were like very out front, like Christian musicians too. So we would just like, you know, we would walk around and these guys would be yelling at us and driving by us and just be like, Bible bangers, you guys are bad, blah, blah, blah. Like, and
good one. That's clever.
It was real clever. Like we were dealing with like the highest rank of dumbasses in this town.
Wow.
And it was just, you know, that was like the environment that like we thrived in and wrote music in, because to us, we were just like, screw you, man. Like we're going to do this and we're going to keep doing this. And it was cool because the town started recognizing it too. So like we'd be in like the local newspaper of the town, and like we would do all these shows at like the town city hall. And we had my dad had a bunch of like friends that were in had like PAs in production, so we were 14 years old and putting on full production, full PA concerts in our little town, selling tickets and having like 200 other 14-year-old kids show up and just killing it. Like, I mean, you know, we had that drive and that passion to do that, and it was freaking awesome. And so these like,
that's good, that's a good story in a bigger city.
Totally.
Wait, they're where? North Dakota. Yeah, I didn't know there were 200 kids to sell tickets to, let alone they actually all showed up.
Yeah. Exactly. And they did because there was nothing else to do. And so, you know, these idiots, you know, these jock small town, you know, assholes would drive by these shows and would try to start things at the shows and would try to just be as terrible as possible because they didn't like what we were doing. And that's what we were up against, you know, that whole time. And so moving forward, having that bond when Hands came along, you know, him and I did, fast forward, him and I did a lot of the writing and did that together. And so Give Me Rest, that last Hands album we put out, we wrote a lot of that. He came down. I was living in Kansas City. He was living in Fargo. He came down for like a week. And we just, again, I had the week like off. We spent a week together in my basement doing what we always did and writing and hammering out songs. And so a lot of that album was that like just him and I personal combination of just jamming. That's all it was, like figuring out stuff. And
why did you move to Kansas City?
My wife is originally from Kansas City, and that's where I met her. And when Hands was at like the peak of its touring, it didn't make sense for her to just like live in Fargo by herself and whatever. So we just figured it was better that like when it came time to tour, the guys would just come pick me up, or I would drive up to Fargo and meet them and whatever.
Okay.
So it was easier that way. So that's how I ended up in Kansas City. But yeah, so Josh and I worked really hard on writing and building the foundation, you know, most of the material of Give Me Rest. And then when it came time to record it, Josh was supposed to come down and meet me to start drum tracking. I was in the middle of having my first kid as well. So the timeline of this was insane. Like, my kid was born February 9th. Him and I wrote in late January. So when it came time to record, I was scheduled, because we were trying to meet this, like, there's the kids there. Something fell down the stairs. But so basically, like, we were scheduled to start recording a week after our first kid was
You became a dad.
Due, right? So I remember Josh Silbernagle calling me just before and being like, and I was in the hospital at the time, because like the baby was getting ready to come, and I remember Josh being like, and he's like the guy of unbelievable stories. Like, this guy has things happen to him that I don't know why God chose him for this position in life, but he was. So, and this has been since we were young, so I believed it fully, but I knew something was is going to be some weird Silbernagle story. So he calls and he's just like, I'm not going to be able to make it. Unfortunately, you're never going to guess what happened. And I'm like, oh God, Josh, like what happened? And he's like, and I've told the story before, so he shouldn't be embarrassed. But, he's like, so I ate this walnut and apparently it didn't digest. And when I pooped, it like cut my butthole open. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, the doctors call it. The doctors call it a rectal fissure. Yeah.
Congratulations. I think that's the most embarrassing story I've heard.
You know, he loves me and it's all good. We'll be friends forever. I'm sorry, buddy. But I'm pretty sure.
Hang on. This story. Hang on. I take notes.
Take notes. I can't remember if he said rectal fissure or anal fissure, but
rectal/anal.
There you go. There you go.
I'm gonna Google that, and I'm horrified at what the pictures are going to be.
Oh, don't do that. Don't Google that. That sounds like a terrible idea. But so anyways, he's like, yeah, I can't play drums. I can't sit down on a stool. And he's driving his car around on a, you know, sitting on a donut pillow, and
Wait. I got it. I just thought of an idea. I'm a drummer, right?
Uh-huh.
There's probably an overlooked market for drummers built in with the center cut out for anal/rectal fissures. We could build that into the throne.
Yeah. I think you could. Yeah.
That's my idea. You heard it here.
Yeah. Had this idea only been around about 6 years ago,
patent pending. Yeah, I could have got a sponsor of a Hands album.
We could have made it happen. So, but anyways, it was crazy, man. It was like I'm like you said, I'm in the hospital ready to have a baby with my wife,
right.
And I'm I'm like, dude, okay, I'm sorry, that sucks. I don't know what to do. I'll call you back like later. Okay.
Your wife must have been like, a walnut? I'm about to pass a baby out of my body.
I know exactly. Yeah. Right. Walnut? Try this. Well, it got crazy because then there were complications with the kid and she had to have a C-section. And then the kid, Arbor, I keep calling her the kid, Arbor was in the NICU for 5 days solid. And so for that 5 days, I just sat there like, in and out of sleep, like in a chair next to her little bedside thing in the NICU, because I was in like super dad mode at that point. And that's like, you know, people always talk about like losing sleep and yeah, I just didn't sleep. I just stayed awake for hours. I never believe that like people really do that kind of stuff. I just think that's like this over exaggeration. I can honestly say that that's the first week and probably the only time ever in my life that that has been a reality. So where I'm just like in this room and in and out of sleep and not, you know, hardly sleeping because, you know, the newborn little precious, awesome daughter is like by my side, like in this intensive care unit. And like, I just couldn't stop. And then I'm also getting phone calls and texts about like, hey, when are we starting recording this album? You know, what are we going to do? What date do you want to come in? And I'm just like, oh my God. So we pushed it back, I think another week. So we brought baby home. And I called the producer. So there's going to be two Joshes now. The Josh Silbernagel is our drummer. Josh Barber, I'm just going to refer to him as Barber, was the producer for Give Me Rest. And so it was my first time working with him. So I'm calling Barber and I'm like, yo, so my drummer has this weird situation going on and he's not going to make it. And I'm a drummer, you know, too. So it's like, and Josh and I drum so like similar, like him and I like learned together throughout the year. So him and I both are not technically like we don't have any chops at all. We're just like hard hitting, like dump a like rock drummers. So we have a similar style. And
plenty
so
plenty of people making a career on that, man.
Oh man. I love it. Like it's so much fun and hits hard. And so Josh was like, I'm not going to be able to make it down. This is my drummer now. And he's like, you're going to have to cut the drum parts. Like we have to get this album done. It has to be out by whatever Face Down Fest or whatever we were shooting for, which would be in April or May. He's like, you have to do it. And I'm just like, okay, whatever. And I'm just thinking like, what a crap show, but like, of course, like let's just do this. Let's make it happen. So we get home from the hospital and I'm spending time with the baby, but I'm also downstairs, like trying to like practice drum parts and then trying to write drum parts because we had three or four songs that hadn't even been written yet. And it was a mess, man. So I come into the studio for the first time with Barber and it was just him and I, and we started with drums and just went from there. And that was the first experience that I had had. I'm sorry it's taking forever to answer one question, by the way, but that's how I roll. So if cut me off at any point. So
no problem.
But so it's my first experience.
I have 114 recording questions. This is going to be a problem. No.
Oh, good. We'll be here for days. I might have to take another shower and do my hair again. So,
yeah.
So it's my first experience like recording by myself though, like tracking everything and, you know, guitars and bass. And, I would have loved to have had Josh, our drummer, there because of his presence and his, that, I think that album would have been better had he been there. And I love that album and it's dear to my heart, you know, and it's definitely the Hands album that I think people will remember us for, you know, but I can't deny, I think that it would have been better had he been there because Josh Silbernagel has this presence, this like he fuels this like need for me to want to think outside of the box. And he was always the one in the band that would try to push me to think outside of the box because that dude doesn't exist in any of this scene at all. Like his brain like is not in this like, you know, hardcore music scene or metal scene. Like this guy listens to his iPod, I think would probably make most people want to jump off a bridge, like, because it's just this crazy, like, you know, at the time it was a lot of really obscure, like, you know, 60s stuff, 70s stuff. But I've always like loved that as he just explores. And even on the road, when we were on the road, like all of us would be sitting on our freaking laptops downstairs, wasting an opportunity in a town that we had never been in. But Josh would be the one that would kick on his shoes right away and just go walk. And he would walk to these thrift stores. He ended up, you should do one with just Josh alone, because this guy's got stories that are insane. But he ended up talking to some like
he's somehow found this like 70s Jesus movement pastor that he had read about teaching or pastoring some weird Lutheran church in Ohio. He went to the guy's office, total like cold call, talked to him, and somehow Josh ended up teaching, like actually pastoring a group of college kids at the session that day. Like they had Josh up on the stand talking for like an hour and he just moseyed on into the building. Like what? He's nuts. At one point he ended up in Fallbrook talking to Dave Mustaine's wife on the phone and coaching her through like marital stuff while he was touring, while Dave Mustaine was touring.
I'm
dead serious. Like the guy is just like carries this thing with him that is incredible. And, I don't know. Like you mentioned Josh Silbernagle. I'm making him sound like a freaking legend here because he probably is. But you mentioned his name within any of our group of friends, and instantly the smiles hit and the stories hit, you know? So.
Okay. All right.
But anyway, so he has this presence. And I remember him pushing me on, you know, like the Creator album. Like all this vocal stuff he wanted to add was like so weird and so like third eye blindish. And I remember being so hesitant about it, but at the same time, just being like, dude, do what you got to do. And then at the end thinking it's really cool. So I can't even imagine what he would have contributed to that record had he actually been in the room with us. I'll always wonder about that, but it was my first experience really just doing it on my own. And I really enjoyed it. You know, I was like, man, this is really cool because I hear the music in my head. You know, when I think of a song, I hear drums and bass and guitars already. So when I'm doing pre-production, I already know where to go with it. I already know what the bass should play. I already know what the guitar should play. And of course, maybe that's not the right thing, but that's what's in my head. So I know how to execute that. And that was the first time I really got to do that and not, you know, ask anybody or feel bad about something have the pressure of like, oh, hey, I know what you should play, but you're here, so you should probably play it, you know, but just put your fingers right there. And not that that happened a lot, but I mean, you know, there was just times where like I would have that in my head and would be real aggressive and like, yo, dude, like without a doubt, like Chief, our bass player, this, you got to play this, man. This is what you got to play right here. Like this is the part.
Right.
So anyways, it was really cool to have that experience, I guess. And that's what set off the beginnings for Everything in Slow Motion. So I just started demoing after Hands was done.
The whole solo artist thing started actually during the Hands album. I didn't know Hands was just Hands was, or the latest Hands album was just you.
Yeah, it was. And I had I did as much as like our friend Ian that used to play guitar in Hands. He came down for like a day, and I had him like, you know, guest vocal on like a song or two, just because I thought it'd make it a little more special, kind of cool. I offered the rest of the guys to come down and hang out and to contribute because it just felt a little weird just being only me. But I mean, I'm 10 hours away, and those guys at that point were pretty removed from the band, so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like they didn't feel it was 100% necessary to take time off of work and drive down and do whatever. So that kind of happened. So
was Hands a Facedown band?
Yeah.
Okay. How did you connect with Facedown?
Through a couple festivals, the summer of 2008. So, a lot of the bands that were already on Facedown knew about Hands cause we had played shows with them. And, at some point, this Cornerstone Festival that used to happen in Bushnell, Illinois
in 2008.
Yeah. Yep. 2008. I bumped into Jason Dunn,
I know the name.
Yeah. Facedown, owner. I bumped into Jason Dunn. And I didn't tell him I was in a band or anything. I knew it was him, and I'd been a Facedown fan for a long time. And so I just started talking to him about music. And we started talking about The Crucified, and then we started talking about Johnny Cash. And then that led to him being like, oh, hey, I'll send you this book that I have. Like, I'll mail it to you. Just give me your email address. I'm like, all right, cool. He was just being really nice. And then we parted ways. Well, 2 weeks later, I see him at another festival. hey, Jason, what's up? And he pulls up the First Hands EP. And he goes, okay, so some of my bands gave me this. You didn't tell me this was you. You didn't tell me you were in a band. And I'm just like, why would I tell you I'm in a band? That's what everybody does. Everybody tells you they're in a band. Exactly. Anyway, so that's how he ended up with the First. That's how we originally met and started talking about, you know, what we were going to do coming up in the future. So, yeah, it was cool.
That's cool that you didn't walk up and you were like, hi, I'm Shane from Hands. Yeah. Let's talk.
Here's a demo.
Because you're done. Yeah. He was just, yeah. That's how it works.
Yeah. He's such a good, you know, and at the time, too, when I initially met him, I didn't have that on my mind. Like, oh, Hands should sign a Face Down. Oh, I should get him a copy. He was just genuinely really a cool guy, and we had some stuff in common, and I enjoyed talking to him. And, you know, I didn't really have any intentions at that point. Like, I didn't go back to the band and be like, okay, I just talked to Jason Dunn. He's going to send me some stuff in the email, and at some point I'm going to slide in this hand CD, and hopefully by November we're going to be in. And, it wasn't that at all. It just kind of naturally happened, you know, which was awesome.
I think something tells me he would have saw through that.
I know for a fact he would have. So, his personality, he's not one of those dudes. Like, he doesn't tolerate garbage like that. You know what I mean? Like, he's really, really good at just being like, oh, okay, cool, man. Thanks. Cool. And then that's passive. It.
Kind of,
you know, so.
Kind of passive, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I heard the stuff in the background.
There's kids going on.
I really.
That's all right. That's all right.
Anyways,
I got kids too. I just locked them on the other side of that big old door in my studio because you're running around making noise too.
Yeah, we just bought a house, so eventually I'll have my own little room. But here I'm in the living room, so rock and roll.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Good for you. You bought a house.
Yeah.
Had to. Too many kids.
Too many kids. Too much stuff to do.
So, Hands eventually just dissolved because of what happened.
We were just done. Like, we made kind of a little, you know, buttercream gang pact at the beginning of our band. That was just like, you know, if it ever becomes like it's just really taxing and it's not fun, or if we ever feel like it's time to pull the plug, you know, let's pull it. And we'd all had bands that ended really terribly, like in the past. And we're like, we're not going to let this, we're not going to let that happen to this ever. And that was before, I mean, that was literally like the opening conversation of starting this band. So we hadn't even done anything yet before we made that decision.
So once Hands was over, you got to the end of it, you just decided, all right, I'm not done.
Yeah, basically, I mean, the guys knew that I was going to keep writing music. I mean, that's just something that like I had to do. So, but they offered, I mean, you know, Josh, our drummer was like, dude, if you want to keep the name, if you want to, I mean, Give Me Rest just came out. It's doing really well. If you want to keep the name and just do it, and keep that, you know, that thing, that ball rolling, like go ahead, it's fine. And for me, it just felt like that would be like really uncomfortable, and I hate when bands do that. Like, I hate when like this name just gets like dragged through the mud for like 15 years because they just can't let it go. And all of a sudden, you know, it's a band with entirely different members that have had nothing to do with the last 10 years. They've only had everything to do with the last 8 months, and I just like, it drives me nuts. Like, it, and I mean, that's, you know, that's I don't know. It's their call.
Well, I mean, different circumstances too. Sometimes labels sign you because of your name, and then and then you go, well, you know, I'm the only guy left. Let's change our name, and the label's like, well, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't. I don't feel like starting over. You know, exactly. We already put in 10,000. Dumb. You can't switch your name now. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I just didn't want to be that. And my relationship, like I said, with those guys was. You know, like our little pact at the beginning of the band really meant a lot to me. And if we weren't going to do it as a group, you know, together, then we weren't going to do it at all. And I wasn't going to be the guy that, like, you know, tried to keep swimming, pulling the name behind my back, hoping for, you know, good results. In my mind, it was kind of a good challenge, too. It's like, I'm going to do something different, come up with a different name and start fresh and see if I can push it, you know, see what happens. We'll be right back.
son would only know his name. It is a broken world.
So I did those first two songs that are on that Red EP, that 7-inch thing.
Red EP.
Mm-hmm. And I just sent those to I wasn't sure. My initial plan was I was going to release like a, you know, like a self-funding thing and try to maybe, you know, see if I could get some crowd support or if anything. My backup plan was I was just going to ask my family, like, hey, can I just have some money? Like, can I borrow some money to do this and see if it sells? And if it sells, I'll pay you back. Like, and that was my original plan. But I wasn't sure how that worked out, like, contractually with Facedown. And I didn't, you know, I really didn't want to, like, do anything to upset them or whatever. So I figured it's like, I'm just going to give, like, the courtesy call to Jason and be like, hey, man, I wanted to keep doing this. I'm going to do it under a different name. I'm going to fund it myself. I just want to make sure it's cool. So I let him know that. And he's like, okay, why don't you send me some demos? I'm like, all right, sweet. So I sent him those demos. And he goes, okay, if you want to release this by yourself, you have my blessing. Like, it's all good. There's no beef there. You know what I mean? Yeah. He goes, but if you want Facedown to release it, because I think it's really, really good and I want to keep putting out music from you, let's do it. And I just, like, had to pull the car over when I, like, heard that. And I'm like, what? Like, I couldn't believe that he was going to still put it out. And I'm like, you know that I'm not going to tour, right? Like, there is no band. I don't have anything. Like, I just have music. And he's like, well, that's what we're good at, man. He's like, that's why I got into this business, is to put out good music. I don't care what else you do. He's like, if you can do it, it's a bonus. But he's like, I'm not going to not put out good music because you're not going to go out and try and generate a ton of income or whatever else. He's like, I was unbelievably blown away. I don't know.
I mean, so many good musicians out there that can't climb in a van and abandon their family.
Yeah.
And now we have the technology to hit record and post it. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
it's true.
That's, man, good for him. Good for Doug.
Yeah. He's,
I got to talk to him.
He's the best, man. He really is. Like, he's the best. He's been an incredible friend and supporter. And I, you know, even like with this EP, every time we release something, I tell him every time, I'm like, dude, you know, if you want to pull the plug, you can. You don't have to do this. And he'll just be like, shut up. One of the best things, this was a recent memory that I love, is I'm like a, when it comes to the live show, for some reason, I just hate our live sets. Like, I'm such a, like a stickler about things. And I just, for some reason, like, when we play, I'll walk off stage and I'll just be super frustrated about, like, my performance and my vocals. And I'll just be like, ugh, man, dang it. Like, I sucked. You know, and it's just my way of, it's been that way for years, and I can't ever walk off stage and be like, yeah, I did it, that was my best, yeah, it felt really good. I'm the guy that walks off and I'm just like making apologies to everybody, you know. So right. I walk off stage of Facedown Fest last year, and I find Jason in the crowd, and he's just like, good job, man. And I'm just like, dude, I'm sorry, man. I'm just like, you know, you don't have to keep putting us on this fest. I'm like, I know, like, it sucks. We're just trying to throw it together all the time. And it was bad. And I couldn't, you know, whatever. And he just kind of looks at me and he's just like, just once, like just one year, one festival. Can you not like ruin this performance for me? Like, he's like, I freaking loved it. And I want to remember that experience because I was back here having the time of my life. He's like, and when you come up and do this, he's like, you just ruin it for me, man. And I'm like,
that's great.
And
you get on your own performance, and he's like, dude, I'm the guy funding it, knock it off. It sounds
funny. Yeah, he's like, I'm the guy that I was back here loving every second of it until you just came up and started apologizing to me for everything. And yeah, it's good, man. He's the best.
Way to go, Shane.
Yeah, I know. Leave it to me. So, but
well, that's a really cool relationship with that label, and to hear that it wasn't like a preconceived, like, well, he did the Hands album by himself already, and he's still obligated for two more albums, so, and we'll just
better it.
But no, that's pretty neat that it was more of a, no, I believe in you.
Kind of thing.
Sounds kind of cliche and cheesy, but I mean, when it's happening at the moment, it is a pull over the car moment with like, wow.
I don't know how much it happens out there. I don't really know, but to me, it felt like, this doesn't happen. Like, this is most bands, like, you know, I mean, to get to a point like that, you know, I mean, you have to be touring for years. You have to do your thing, which granted I did put in my time, with Hands. But to market a completely new project with a completely new name, only riding off the fact of like the music and, oh, this guy sang in Hands, which to me is worth, maybe, I don't know, like 60 people being like, oh, cool, let's listen to it. But, hi, honey. Do you want to come here?
Let me see.
Come here. Let's show me your puppy. Come here. Do you want to show me your puppies
too?
Oh, she's being shy.
There's little girls and puppies. Come on. This is the best metal podcast ever. I love it.
Ever. Yeah. So she's two. This is Veda. She's 2.5, but she's not coming this way. Here's Arbor. Arbor, do you want to come say hi? Come here. Do you want to come say hi? She'll come say hi. This is my 5-year-old.
Okay.
Come here. Hey, there she is.
Hi, Arbor. Hi?
Are you just giving the tough guy look?
Whoa.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Go have fun. All right.
I just got my dad's on Face Down Records. Stare down.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you look up every band picture from like Face Down Records circa 2003, I remember going to the Face Down family page and all their band pictures, every band, this was like a thing, was like, like arms folded, like
describe yourself for the audio. Arms folded. The picture's taken low, so the shot is up. So you're kind of in that posturing, like
You're like, very. It's very much like a look that would say like
It's Christian music. You got a problem?
That exactly. Kind of you got a problem. I remember
everybody
playing
relax.
I remember playing this New Year's festival thing in Minnesota in 2004, and you could always tell the Face Down bands because they were the only ones in the dead of winter wearing basketball shorts and basketball jerseys while they were playing. But we were just talking about that the other day. It's funny, like how far, like Face Down, you know, as a label, like what they've how far they've come from, like being so like distinctively like hardcore, you know, like West Coast, like
basketball jersey
tough core. Hardcore,
I heard people call it basketball jersey core, and I always
And now they have, you know, now they have weird Misfit Toys bands like Everything in Slow Motion and My Epic, and then in the past, you know, Hope for Home and stuff like that, to where now you can go to Face Down and you can get so many different flavors from that label of music, which is freaking awesome, you know. So
it's called growth. I like that.
Yeah, it's great. So, but anyway,
let's talk about Laid Low.
Let's talk about Rob Lowe.
Let's talk about Rob. Let's talk about your new EP, Rob Lowe. It's confusing. Everybody just put what?
Yeah. It's getting great in here.
We're supporting a new EP called Not Rob Lowe.
Yeah, it's called Not Rob Lowe.
It's called Not Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
Oh, more well, kids.
Oh, the kids brought some bubble things up to me that they want open. You have to go ask mommy. Yeah, go ask mommy. Go ask mommy. All right. Daddy's trying to pretend he's still in a band. All right. Anyways.
Yeah, I'm trying to pretend my podcast matters. Get those bubbles out of here. But I'm...
This is the best.
The new EP coming out April 22nd.
April 22nd. Yep. Yeah. So I
timed this podcast for a reason because I kind of wanted to drop it out there and let Shannon push it around and hopefully people hear your story. You know.
Oh, dude, this is like the best podcast ever. So,
can I get that again? Say that. Pick up your phone and say that really clearly into the phone. Oh.
As the story goes. This
grows.
I said grows.
You said goes. Sound like goes.
Hey man, it must be the audio here. I'll fix it later. The best podcast ever.
That ringtone is going to be available on the As the Story Grows Bandcamp page.
You can download it. There we go. It's perfect. So, all right. So yeah, the EP. April 22nd. I basically like with this EP, like I said before, just wanted to bring a whole different vibe to the table. I worked with, this producer, Jay Hall. He's out of Nashville. He's a really, really, really good dude. Good friend of mine and, has, you know, he's not a dude that like, he's specialized more in like, just like rock music and not metal. You know, he doesn't do metal really. So I thought it would be a good choice because I've worked with the same producer for the last 5 years. That's Josh Barber, who I mentioned earlier. Right. And him and I have always done, you know, really cool, great things together and really loved working with him. And for this, you know, I really just wanted different ears on the project. I wanted a different vision, someone that, you know, like I wanted to make myself uncomfortable because I could always trust that Josh. Hey, you gotta go. What?
You gotta go.
What's up?
Hello.
Can you say hi? Can you at least say hi?
Hello.
Okay, what? You're showing me a bucket right now. What's there's nothing in it?
What is this for?
I don't know. It's an empty bucket. It could be for a lot of things. Cereal. Kool-Aid, whatever you want to put in there. It's all you. Put your hand in it.
Sand? You could.
Sand? Huh?
Huh? Sand.
Okay, go play. Go. 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 Run.
Oh, man. I just suggested sand. I hope she makes a giant mess in your house somewhere.
She probably will. It'll probably be right on the couch, and I'm just going to be shouting your name as it happens. Just
Nothing would make – please record that and send it to me. Nothing would make me happy. Be like, that son of a bitch had to say sand. He couldn't have said something easier to vacuum.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or glitter would be the worst.
I didn't think of glitter.
I hate glitter with a passion.
Glitter? That's a fucking glitter.
Glitter, like that's like with having girls, it's one of the worst things. Glitter is like the worst thing on the planet. Like glitter is worse than cocaine.
I think one of the I've never done a line of either, so I can't give you that comparison. But
I've never done a line of glitter.
Nothing makes me nothing makes me angrier than reaching into a gift bag. And you reach in for one item, and the glitter, and you're just like, oh my god, that's going to be stuck to my kitchen table for a month. I hate that.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. So, So Jay Hall, so Josh Barber and I have always done really cool things. Like you said, it's always been great. But with this, I really wanted just some different ears. I wanted a person with a different vision. I can always count that, you know, like I said, with Josh Barber, I could always count that he was going to do something awesome. That it was going to be a guaranteed home run. And when you have that, like, you know, comfortable feeling, like, no matter what, it's going to be good. You know, no matter what, it's going to be all good. that was the big thing with recording with Jay, is I hadn't worked with Jay. He hadn't really, you know, I hadn't really heard anything like on the heavy side, like heavy side, you know. I hadn't like heard like screaming vocal stuff or anything. I mean, I just didn't really, you know, I just knew that he was extremely talented and really cool, and all the stuff he had done in the past I was a fan of, but none of that stuff was like, you know, I feel like none of it was along the path of what I was doing. So it was cool. I went into it like being like, all right, I don't know what's going to happen here, but I'm excited to see what happens, you know, what comes out on the other side.
Yes. Yeah, so
I'm really
the whole live without a net unknown factor.
Yeah. That's something. You know, I've always been really comfortable with my own amps, you know, my own guitar tone, which a lot of people that know me know that, you know, that I'm very like much a fighter for like my gear and not having to use like, anything else. And so when I drove down there, I left all of my amps at home. I'm like, if I can't make whatever amps he has in that studio work, then what good am I? You know what I mean? Like, I should be able to pull a good tone out of anything. I should be able to pull a good tone out of a freaking milk carton, you know? So so just trying to push myself and challenge myself in those ways. And one like cool moment of making the EP that really like hit it home for me is, so when I was in the studio, I was trying to, like I said, I was uncomfortable. So I was trying to find like those moments of being comfortable. I was like scattering a little bit.
Right.
And I remember we got to bass and I was recording bass and we're trying to find the bass tone. And I'm just like, oh, Jay, I'm like, can you make this like, can you make it just sound a little more like gritty and tinny, like kind of that, like, you know, like low end tinny kind of sound. And he goes, I didn't tell you. And I was like, what? And he goes, we're not making a metal record. We're making a rock record. And I was like, there it is. Like, that's all that needs to be said. Like, I immediately was trying to default to all the things that I knew from the past, you know?
Sure. Familiarity.
And his ears and his vision was different, you know. It wasn't something that I would normally go to feel safe. And so I instantly, you know, I like that feeling a lot. And so it was cool. I mean, so that was my experience, was just like getting to, I didn't really, like, the whole time I was making this record, I didn't feel like I knew what was going to be at the end of it. I didn't have that feeling of like, oh yeah, this is going to be a good one. Or like, oh yeah, this is going to be whatever. I had this like, what the hell is this going to sound like at the end of all this? Like, what kind of record am I making, you know? And having that feeling was, for me, so uncomfortable, but so incredible at the same time, you know? And cool. At the end of it, being able to just push play and sit back and listen, I loved it. I loved every second of it. I'm just like, man, I just found a whole new side, a whole new thing, you know, that I have never experienced.
Why do you like a movie? Why do you like a haunted house?
Exactly.
I don't know what's around the corner. I don't know what's about to happen. If you know what's going to happen around the next corner, why did I spend $8 to do this?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of, I mean, that describes that perfectly. That's exactly what this EP was. And
I'm a genius, Shane. You just got to give it.
You are a genius. I'll admit. Yeah. So sand on the couch and glitter on the couch and cocaine on the couch and
do a line of glitter. Yeah. You know.
So, anyways, here, hold on 1 second. We might have to edit this out.
Okay. I need you to go upstairs, honey. Okay. Yeah, I know, but you're going to have to do it upstairs.
I got to do this.
I know. I got to do this. Holly. Oh my gosh. Hold on.
We're almost done, man. I can tolerate it if you can. It's okay.
Oh, dude, it's all right. Yeah, it's all good.
I have a question about you did call in Miles McPherson to play drums.
I did. Yeah.
My question about him, I could have did the research. I could have Googled this, so shame on me, but he played in Paramore.
Yeah.
And the whole reason Aaron Gillespie got a gig with Paramore is because Miles almost killed himself on a golf cart, right?
Yes. Yes.
Is that directly related to how he didn't play with Paramore anymore?
That is 100% the story. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay. Being part of the drumming, not community, but the fact that I like follow the stuff and I follow drumming things on Twitter and all that and everything.
Yeah.
I heard Miles McPherson, Paramore, played with Kelly Clarkson and everything, rolled a golf cart and damn near ripped his own face off.
They saw that
hospital picture of him sitting in the bed. He looked like he had the shit kicked out of him. And I was like, that's the last time I heard his name. And then he shows up on your new EP. So I'm glad he's okay.
He could have died, no doubt. Yeah. It was bad. And that's Miles is a really good friend of Jay, the producer.
Okay.
And Jay is the one that mixed Phoenix 2 years ago. So rewind. That's how I first met Jay, is by him mixing Phoenix. Through him mixing Phoenix is how Miles got a hold of me and was like, dude, I really like the music. I really like the record. I've been hanging with Jay. He's been, doing his thing. It sounds great. If you're ever down here, let me know. And I'm like, cool. I'm actually coming down there in like 2 weeks. So this was November of 2013. Miles's accident was August of 2013. So when I first met him, he was like just kind of, he had been like through several, like a couple months of just like bed rest and medicine and, trying to recover, like trying to, play drums again, trying to all this stuff. And, I know the Paramore gig for him was on hold. And from what I understand, he got, he's good friends with Aaron Gillespie. And so he had Aaron kind of take the position over. And obviously I'm sure Aaron knows the Paramore people as well. So, so that kind of happened. And, that's right around the time that I met him. And yeah, he rolled the freaking golf cart. Basically what happened is he like almost like they tried like going down a really like steep hill in their neighborhood and, it got a little out of control and he almost hit a parked car and to miss the parked car, he swerved and everybody was thrown off the golf cart except him. And, the way I understand it is that the golf cart pinned him down and pinned his head to the concrete. So he broke all these bones in his face and everything else.
And dragged him like 20 feet.
Yeah, it dragged him. It dragged him and then the battery acid started leaking. And so Miles has burns, scars on his arms and hands and his back and his everywhere. And it was really, really bad. But anyways, we throughout the last 2 years have just kept in contact and trying to figure out different outlets, to do things. And when it came time to cut the EP, like I said, I really wanted to do things differently. And so, bringing a different sound, is not, what am I trying to say? The drums are like the biggest thing. When you start recording drums, that sets the tone for the entire record. And because I wanted something different and wanted a different vibe, I really felt it was necessary to not have me play drums, Miles, like I said, we'd always been talking and I knew that he really enjoyed the band and the music. And so, I just asked him, I'm like, dude, do you want to do it? And he's just like, oh my God, I thought you'd never ask me, like, hell yeah, I want to do it. Cool. And, he I had drum parts written in pre-production and we scrapped all of them and I didn't show him any of those parts. So we got into the studio, he got to hear the demos without drums and just did his own thing. And I'm like, dude, do whatever you want with this.
That's the question I was going to lead to. I didn't know if you just called Miles in because he's Miles McPherson and he played your drums, or you're saying Miles is on this album. Like he actually did his thing in it. That's very good.
I can play the drums. I can do my parts. I don't need Miles to execute drum tracks for me. You know what I mean? And that's something
honestly, I was a little bit afraid that you called in a big name because I dropped a big name on my album, but
yeah,
you didn't.
I don't think so. No, that's cool. Yeah, I'm fully capable of playing and cutting good drum tracks, and Miles would be the first to say that too. You know what I mean?
Sure.
The big thing with Miles is that I really wanted a different flavor, and him and I are similar in the fact that we hit really hard. We're both aggressive rock drummers. Miles is just incredible. You know what I mean? I knew that he had a desire to do this. And it wasn't just like I just need to cut another session to, do another session. Like he really wanted to invest his time and his energy into it and give it what he, wanted to give. And so, I told him, I'm like, dude, just do your thing, write your own drum parts and whatever happens, I'll just play, if you want to change the song, I don't really care. Like, I'll work around it afterwards and create what I want to create, off of what you're doing. And the vibe of every song changed completely from what I originally was shooting for. Oh, so,
dude, as a drummer, that feels so good to hear. That is so great. It's so overlooked sometimes.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And it's like, it's definitely not a name thing. I mean, I know like Miles is a great drummer and has done really incredible things, but I'm not definitely not one of those people that would just be like, hey, buy this EP because guess who's playing drums? That's something that even previous interviews, I've never been like, so this guy that was the drummer for Paramore and the drummer for, I'm always just like, I had my friend Miles play. He's a session dude from Nashville.
I got the vibe from you that you weren't like that.
Yeah. He's legitimately an incredible drummer and an incredible human being. And, like I said, with me, it's important that whoever is investing in this project is doing it because they're legitimately, they feel it and they're into it. And Miles was into it. And so it wasn't that hard to just be like, yo, dude, take the reins. I want you to do this. And he crushed it. Like, I love the drums on this EP. He just freaking crushed it. So, it's good. So from there, he made it really easy to build on that as far as what I wanted to do. And it's cool because it still retains the same, everything in slow motion kind of feel, and sound, but it's just, it's just a different world. I'm stoked. I a lot of people ask a big thing was, so there's no screaming on it, what do you think people are going to think? What do you think people are going to say about it? Like, that was like kind of in my group of friends, like, how do you think the response is going to be? Are you nervous about it? Like, what do you think? And I'm just like, there's two words on the entire record that are screamed and they're in the same song. And, it's funny. Like I just said, if people want the old stuff, if they're only attracted to this music because they're screaming, then cool. That's fine. Like, that's their thing. And that's what the old records are for. They'll always be there.
Yes,
you know, you can listen to them. They'll always be the same. They'll always give you that thing. So, but with this, it's like, and I've been really fortunate through Hands and through this project to have, and it feels weird calling people fans, but I can't think of anything else. Listeners, maybe. But then I just sound like a dick. So,
they're fans.
They're fans. It's cool. It's cool. I feel like I've always had fans that
you're not making music for people not to listen to it, Shane.
Yeah, exactly. Cool.
Yeah.
I feel like this, Hands and this project have always had fans that are really that are I love you. You
I love you too.
You got the you know exactly how to talk to me with this, because you're talking to me how all my friends talk to me. So
I'm one of the crew from North Dakota.
You're one of the crew now. So, the fans have always been open and really I think they crave a new sound and a new vibe and evolving with the band, and are not the kind of surface level fans that are just like, oh, well, no screaming. See ya. And, it's always been that way. So,
you remind me of Cloud Kicker. You remind me of Ben Sharp from Cloud Kicker. He's a do it all by myself musician also, and he takes chances. He does the big landscape thing. If you've never heard him, I highly recommend Cloudkicker.
I've definitely heard of him. I've got some friends that have suggested it, and yeah. Me being
he's the same way. He's the same way where he's like, I have this one idea that I don't really think fits with anything else.
Yeah.
And I do this by myself and I make my own rules. So I'm going to release this alone. Here's one song.
Yeah.
And then here's an album of this kind of fits. And now I'm going to do this newest thing. It doesn't say, and if you don't like it, don't friggin' buy it. I don't care. Yeah. I'm going to go back to my day job now, you know?
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like with me, you know, I look at this as like, every single record is an opportunity to try and experiment and to do something that I'm going to be really excited about. And I don't want to throw any of those opportunities away on trying to make other people feel comfortable. You know what I mean? And you know, with this, I wasn't nervous at all. I knew that there was maybe going to be, you know, for every one or two fans that maybe I would lose, in the sense of like, well, it's not heavy anymore. There would be 20 more fans that would be like, oh, cool. I guess I've never checked this band out. Like, this is awesome. So anyways, it's cool. And what's awesome is it really exposed, to me anyways, I like listening to my own music. I like it a lot. I drive around with my own CDs and I just like it. It feels weird maybe calling it like studying it, but I like hearing the patterns and it teaches me something, like to where when I go to write next, I know like what not to do, what to do, like what moments are really shining. I really like that to try to improve what I'm doing. So
I do it. I mean, like just doing this podcast, I go back and listen to it, not because I'm so full of myself. I think I have such a sexy voice.
Yeah.
No, I sat too close to the mic. I'm breathing through my nose too much and it sounds like it's whistling.
I did try
EQing that differently and it just sounds hissy like a cassette tape. Now there's nothing wrong with that. You're just kind of criticizing and, yourself, you know, and learning from it.
And on top of it, I mean, you know, on top of that, of course, I'm really proud of it. And I really, you know, those are like diaries for me that I can revisit of really good moments and times with my friends and making the record. And, you know, that's awesome. So, but yeah, so with the, listening to this new stuff, it's like, I'm already thinking about the future now. Like I'm excited for the EP to come out without a doubt, but I'm already writing for an actual full length now. So, because I know what to do, like there are moments in that EP where I hear, I'm like, oh, okay, that's it. That's the sound. Like, that's what I need to do right there. Like it's teaching me how to further explore, you know what I mean? But, I don't know. It's cool, man. I really like it a lot. I'd be really pissed if I put out another record that just sounded like Phoenix or Give Me Rest. I'd be pissed right now.
Good for you. That's good. That's a good note. That's a good note to end on. A guy put out an EP that he's proud of. There's nothing wrong with that.
Hey, ba-boom. There it is. So, but yeah, man, it's fun. I thoroughly enjoy it. So, and as soon as people stop listening, well, then I'll be releasing my lonely demos on SoundCloud by myself. So, whatever lonely happens.
Demos on SoundCloud.
Yeah. So I'll have like
you started another band called Lines of Glitter.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have like my two friends on Facebook that really like it.
There you go.
That should share it, and then that'll be it. So that'll be it for old Shane. So
cool.
But I'm stoked. So
good. I'm glad you're stoked. April 22nd, Face Down Records. I'll put a link in the show notes to check it out. Shane, thanks so much, man. This was a blast.
Yeah.
This is really cool.
Peace. Say bye.
Bye.
She's just saying, All right, let's go get crazy with glitter and cocaine. All right.
As the story grows.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.